Let's foray into Nevada's wild spaces. This is a half an hour adventure with the Nevada Department of Wildlife. This is Nevada Wild.
Here on this mountaintop,
welcome to Nevada Wild, brought to you by the Nevada Department of Wildlife. I'm your host, Aaron Keller, and we have a new co-host, but a familiar voice to the podcast, Bobby Jones, joining us today. He's our outdoor connection coordinator, and we have staff specialist Cody Schroeder joining us. He's in charge or tasked with managing mule deer and antelope for the Department of Wildlife. Thanks for joining us, both of you.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we have a pretty exciting topic today. We're going to be talking all about big game, strategy, application, quota. We're mid-April now, and it seems like that's the topic around the office. Every phone call, email, social media post we get is all about big game right now, and so we felt fitting to sit down with Cody and chat a little bit. Bobby, I wanted to hit you up first. How excited are you for this time of year?
I'm always excited for this time of year, probably too much so. I had to take a step back a couple of years ago. My wife kind of got worn out on how much me and my best friend like to go back and forth over where we're going to apply for mule deer. It's kind of the thing I put the most time into that probably I really could do a whole lot less and do just the same. But I'm excited this year because we had another mild winter. Cody's actually going to shed light on a couple positive things for mule deer, so pretty exciting.
Yeah. Cody, are you running on fumes this time of year, or how's it going?
I'm pretty exhausted, but we got a couple more weeks to go. I got to get through the commission meeting in May and then the draw, and then once that's over, you know, I can relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have a big cup of coffee sitting in front of us right now.
Yeah.
It's well, let's kick it off, Cody. What do you got? What do you want to start with?
I mean, we can probably just start with the outlook for mule deer, I guess. Okay. Overall, just kind of, you know, generally speaking, things are looking a lot better for mule deer. Coming off of a really hard winter last year, and probably some of our all-time lows for populations across the state. We had a pretty hard winter in the eastern part of the state, especially long, cold winter with record snowfall. So we lost a lot of deer and had pretty poor fawn recruitment. However, the upside is the forage conditions throughout the year, some of the moisture that we received last summer and fall. And then this year we've had a pretty mild winter. We've had really good snow and moisture, but it hasn't been cold. As cold and dreary as it was last mm-hmm. winter, so we've actually seen some pretty positive recruitment in our fawns. So things are looking up for mule deer. For
right
sure.
On. Yeah, that's kind of the wait and see type thing. Where after the hard winter, everybody's like, "Oh, we're gonna have a great year next year because of all the moisture." Well, it's really the second and the third year following that you have to watch, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's gonna be a lot more fawns. There'll be some young bucks on the landscape. Uh-huh. But like horn growth should be really good this year. Antler growth for mule deer, for instance, and horns for pronghorn, I think, just because of all the moisture received. So even though we do have fewer deer on the landscape compared to a few years ago, I do think things could be pretty good in terms of that.
That's great. And then, so you're looking at your memo, which we want to kind of shine some light on that memo. It's attached to the commission meeting page as support material, and it's got a ton of just good information. We'll post a link to that in the description of the podcast. But what about some bright spots as far as mule deer go?
Well, I mean, yeah, in terms of, so we are looking to increase tags. That's our recommendation. Now, we haven't got to the commission meeting yet.
Right.
Of course, they have the ultimate say. So we'll see where we ended up with that. But, you know, a lot of that has to do with recruitment, as I just mentioned. So we're, you know, fawns coming into the year. We had good high survival throughout the year, the last year, so we didn't have as heavy a winter. So we are We are increasing tags a little bit. A lot of this has to do with some of the policy things we've changed. And one in particular, so we're going to be issuing more primitive weapon tags this year in relation to all tags. So some policy changes that were made, basically changes a little bit of the demand that we used before. Just simply put, we're taking a few of the illegal weapon tags and kind of shifting those over into the muzzleloader and archery seasons. So we should have a little bit more opportunity in some of those primitive weapon hunts compared to previous years.
Yeah, I'm just I'm looking over this memo and was going to point out to anyone who wanted to read along that we share all that information on commission meetings on the NV Board of Wildlife.org website. Wanted to touch on, Cody, that similarly to the positive outlook for mule deer, things also look pretty positive for antelope. Do you mind just touching on that?
Yeah, I mean, similar situation with the weather, obviously, and antelope seem to be responding as well. So higher fawn recruitment. We had like record low quotas last year, so we were pretty conservative on quotas. So we go out and do our surveys and, you know, kind of reassess things on a year-to-year basis. And we've got a few more antelope, especially bucks, on the landscape. So we're proposing to increase harvest there a little bit too. So there should be a few more tags. And that all that fixed demand also applies to antelope. So you're actually going to see some bigger jumps in some of those primitive weapons for antelope, just simply because the demand, you know, for those like muzzleloader antelope tags just wasn't there. So we had really low quotas, like one or two in some units that might jump up to, you know, 10 or 15 this year if the commission approves those.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some definite opportunity there if you like to hunt. It doesn't mean you don't have the opportunity with an illegal weapon. That opportunity is still there. It's just, you know, your draw odds might change a little bit. So I'd be studying our draw odds and watch that commission meeting. If you know, you can always change your application strategy after the meeting. I think the applications are due May 8th this year.
Yeah, so you're going to have about 5 days in between to kind of get in there and fine-tune your choices.
If you're really studying draw odds, that you want to pay attention to that stuff.
Well, I know some people have had that question in the past, right, kind of a criticism of, hey, I really want to know what the recommendations are. You know, what's in the book is last year's, and that's true. But if you listen in, you can hear in real time of exactly what's going to happen or have your feedback heard. Yeah, I was looking at the recommendation, even if it's not the full recommendation, it's just positive to hear that the department is recommending increases in for mule deer and antelope, I think is the take-home message for people at home.
Yeah, and I mean, better yet, listen in to the commission meeting. You can actually go to the commission meeting, or you could submit your public comment even through Zoom on your phone or wherever. If you feel strongly about these quotas or want to see them change in any way or provide more or less opportunity, that's your chance. And I have seen them take public comment, you know, and change the recommendation sort of like on the fly based on, you know, that meeting's public comment. So it is important if you feel strongly. But if you just want to know what's going on, you can just listen in, or it's recorded also, and you can, you know, you got a few days to to change. Correct.
True. Yeah, and it's also all types of archery, not just longbow, recurve type stuff. So we've gotten a lot of phone calls. Not a lot, but we've gotten some phone calls just trying to clarify that.
Yeah, we didn't make any changes to the regulations around those weapon types. We're just calling them primitive because they're not a rifle or an illegal weapon type hunt category.
Yeah, great point.
I guess other changes, you know, the juniors we talked about. So we've had quite a few changes there as well. The main one for juniors this year is that the deer is going to be buck only across the board, all units. We got rid of the, you know, option to have a doe or a buck on those tags. We've also split out some of the junior units for our what we call our alternative units. So you have to pick your weapon class there. You're going to pick either an illegal weapon or a muzzleloader or archery. You can actually put both on your application, I believe, so you can mm-hmm. do both. But if you get the tag, you're only going to be allowed to hunt in either the illegal weapon season or the archery and muzzleloader seasons.
Yeah, and that's for some of the units. And what I appreciate about that is the idea is creating more opportunity by allowing kids that may want to hunt with these primitive weapons a better chance at getting a tag in said units. So I don't know what the percentage was, but I know it was a net increase in junior tags, and I think that was part of the goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just giving them the option. If that's what they wanted, then now they get to choose.
Yeah, the other thing with mule deer, I've gotten a few calls about this, is we got rid of all of our doe hunts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have bonus points, you still get to keep them. You won't be able to apply this year because we don't have any tags, but they don't go away. I hope to bring those back in the future. But with some of the retractions we've seen in our populations, we felt it was necessary to eliminate some of those doe hunts simply to provide some room for growth for our herds, to let them build back up. Once, you know, like I said, we had a fantastic year this year with recruitment. Hopefully they'll be back up and we'll bring those doe hunts back in a couple years. So you can, you know, use your bonus points then.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a pretty optimistic outlook as far as deer herds go.
I'm always wanting to be optimistic. Yeah. Yes. I can't predict the future, but things are looking good right now.
It's trending in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And same with antelope, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the other thing, I don't know, regardless of when that comes back, just hearing that, I mean, this is the whole idea is to, on the conservative side of things, give mule deer the best chance we can to grow populations. And just cool that we've got conditions to start pushing the needle in that direction rather than the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a little bit of reading if you are a parent of a junior, to just make sure that you know what your, you know, what your options are. But if you're somebody that only wants to put in for a certain unit, you essentially are getting more choices for that unit, but you do have to pick. And depending on what tag you could draw, you'd have to hunt with that unit or that that weapon. But
yeah,
might be more fun.
The overall idea is to kind of, like you said, provide a little bit more opportunity. I hope it kind of stems a little more interest in the archery and muzzleloader as a weapon type, especially for kids. I know archery is getting really popular. We have programs in the school. We have had that for years, but they're starting to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully these kids develop the skills necessary and they can have that as an option. They had it before, but now it's a little bit, you know, you might have a little bit more opportunity.
Yeah,
in these units.
Yep. Yeah.
That they
yeah.
apply to.
Like I said, if you want to pick that, if you want to hunt a certain unit, this gives you another choice. And then we did, after these hunts kind of got split off, we did develop what we're calling a primitive weapons course. So it's going to teach them archery and muzzleloader in a combined class. It's not like required or anything like that, but we're going to teach you the ins and outs of archery and the ins and outs of muzzleloader all in one class. So if you're a parent listening, we would encourage you to, and you're interested in these tags, to attend one of these classes with your junior hunter, and you will learn something, because I've taken the class and I've learned. So
and like Cody alluded to, I mean, it doesn't have to be one or the other. You have five choices.
Right.
You can select, your first three choices can be the any legal weapon, the normal hunts where it's all three types, right, or any legal weapon, and then the last couple could be, hey, here's a primitive weapon hunt in this unit group, and here's a primitive hunt unit in this group, and just try and do the best you can with using all five choices.
Yeah, is it safe to say that the odds will be better to draw the archery and muzzleloader?
So the way I would characterize it, because these only apply to the alternative units, which already have pretty low quotas.
Okay.
And so relatively speaking,
yeah,
for those unit groups, yes, you should have a little bit more opportunity. But like comparing, for instance, 194, 196 to, say, Area 10 or Area 7 or something like that for a junior, still way more better odds in the big units.
Yeah.
So you want to probably put that as your last choice as a junior to guarantee, or not to guarantee, but to, you know, increase the likelihood of drawing a tag.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Right on. I think we're going to take a quick break. We're going to shuffle some papers around and get our thoughts together, and we'll come back after this short break. You're listening to Nevada Wild. Saskatchewan, where the getting's good. If you're getting gone, I'm going to put my boots and my hat back on, because I'm long gone to Saskatchewan, long gone to Saskatchewan.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, leave us a review on iTunes and SoundCloud. For more information on hunting, fishing, boating, and all things wildlife, go to endow.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Nevada Wild. I'm your host, Aaron Keller, and we're talking all about deer and antelope big game application strategy, quotas, outlook, mostly just hanging out chatting. But we in the first half, we talked about quota. We talked about some junior. We got into junior mule deer hunts. Now we want to open it up to the adult side of things, and also talk about some resources we have on our websites, and some tips and tricks, maybe some hot spots, some bright spots in some of our quotas. And it's funny because sometimes we should just record the break, and when we're just hanging out chatting, because it's such good information. And so we're going to try and throw some tidbits out there for anybody that wants to write some notes. Now's the time to get your pen and paper. Bobby, I'm going to throw it to you. What do you got? What do you want to start with in the second half?
I think what I would start with is telling people they can look at the bonus point tables and harvest success rates and our top 10 resources and for now until the rest of the time, but don't get too wrapped up in the numbers. I've already gone down this road. You can only squeeze so much juice out of it, and at the end of the day, you still want to apply for the places that you want to go. I don't have a lot of sympathy desperately want to go mule deer hunting, and they only apply for Mount Rose, and they don't know why they haven't drawn a tag yet. Because that's not the strategy you want to employ if you desperately want to go deer hunting. Very few tags, lots of demand, and whether it's looking at, you know, from the Hunt Envy tool, or, you know, me personally, I'd like to look at kind of the readouts, the Excel sheets that we have on what demand is, how many tags are in an area, what the success is. I'm going to switch it up this year, and I'm going back to archery. I want to go deer hunting as much as I can, and that's one of the ways to get there. Definitely other ways, but that's what I'll be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Cody, would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always tell people some of the best units to hunt are the ones that you know, or that your friends have hunted, or, you know, that can go with you and help you too. So I wouldn't get too wrapped up in the draw statistics, and, you know, it is good to look at all that stuff. And I know people calculate their own draw odds and everything. And that's great. But, you know, at the end of the day, you want to go have an enjoyable time and just, you know, not be too stressed out, application period. And I do that with other state applications too. I probably spend way too much time on it, you know?
Right.
But yeah, go apply for the units, you know. And, you know, if you want to draw a tag, like Bobby said, look at the bigger units. For deer, that's Elko County, essentially. You can look at anything around in Elko County, Area 6, Area 7, Area 10. Even though we've cut tags last year, and we're going to look at slight increases, those are still some of the best opportunities to go hunting. In terms of, you know, if you're really just only about, you know, quality, or, you know, you're willing to wait, you know, 5 to 10 years to draw a tag, I would be looking at Lincoln County. I would be looking at Lincoln County right now, which has always historically been where a lot of the big bucks mm-hmm. are. But I think it's coming on really strong. It gets a lot of moisture, monsoonal moisture, and they've got a lot of rain, which translates into, you know, antler growth. Mm-hmm. And even though those areas are limited, I still think Area 22, 23 and 24 are going to be like your go-to units. And then for me, I really think the middle between those two extremes, Elko County, Lincoln County, is Central Nevada, oftentimes overlooked, because there's quite a few tags, but just lower demand for those units. So like Area 14 and Area 15 look really good right now for mule deer. in terms of our buck to doe ratios and recruitment, and not as many people put in for those units across all the weapon types. Those are going to be good this year, I think. And then you've got Area 17 as well, which I know is some of our favorite areas to hunt. It's hard to hunt. It's big mountain range, a lot of, you know, wilderness area, but it's a cool mountain range, man. And that deer herd is cranking right now.
Yeah, it's funny when you're listing off the areas and I'm looking at a map kind of above your head, and they're all different hunts though.
Yeah.
If you look at Elko County compared to Lincoln County, that those are two the same. You're hunting the same animal, but it's a totally different hunt. And then the same with like Central Nevada. I mean, you're backpacking, you're sleeping on the mountain for the most part if you want to have your best chance of getting a big buck or a decent buck anyway. And so I think that's interesting to throw out kind of those through corners of Nevada. Or it's pretty awesome. I think another thing is just where you want to hunt.
Yeah.
You know, where you want to spend the most time, because you are going to have to scout.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure.
And
I mean, if you want to have the best chance for success.
And so you're looking at driving across the state to go, you know, check out your unit and spend some time in your unit. It just depends kind of how much farther you want to drive, I guess.
And there's a lot of ground to cover in those units.
Yeah.
I mean, the access varies from a lot of access to hardly any access unless you're willing to hike in those Central Nevada units. So, yeah, I like to look at those as sort of that middle ground between less people, fewer tags, but still awesome opportunity and for really nice deer in those units.
Mm-hmm. I mean, our mediocre, quote-unquote, hunting tags, you know, are competitive with many states' best tags in terms of, like, how many hunters are going to be out there with you at the same time, quality of the experience, how much, you know, freedom you have in terms of an entire, you know, quarter of a mountain range and you don't see a person in a day. These are the pieces of the experience that I think maybe we overlook if we're looking too Nevada-centric, and that you go somewhere else, it's a very different experience.
Yeah, and the length of our seasons is another one that people overlook. If you go out on the opener, you might run into some crowding. But if you go out mid-season or towards the end of the season, oftentimes what I found is a lot fewer people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just provide that flexibility with having a month-long season, for instance, for archery. And so you can get out there first thing and scout it and be ready to go opening day, or you can wait. Or you can do both. If you don't see what you want to see, you know, on the opener, you wait till the end of the season, and there's usually a lot fewer people out there at the last week of the season, in my experience.
And the same with muzzleloader. I mean, it's the perfect time to be outside. The weather's great.
Right.
Some of the best hunts that I've had are archery and muzzleloader, because it's you get to go. And for anybody that's like, say, if you're living in Reno and you're only putting in for the units outside of Reno, you're shorting yourself a way better experience of camping, spending time outside, and going to get the deer camp type experience.
Yeah.
If you're hunting out of your house, you're coming home every night. It's a different experience being able to go out into Nevada, like Bobby said, and experience that openness and the freedom to just go hunt.
And I know that there's probably a little bit of fear that some people have when they apply for units they're not familiar with. But if you're open to that idea, that's a really fun way to get to know different parts of the state. Apply for somewhere you've never been, you know, give someone here a call, read the information sheets, do the best you can to kind of get a feel for it, take a trip out there, make a camping trip out of it, drive some of the roads, look at some of the hills, figure it out on the front end, and, you know, that can be your new spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more or less in the line of thinking there are some people that for sure know where they want to go, and if you do and you're locked in and you're happy to wait, that's awesome. And if not, you might have to, you know, look at somewhere new and, you know, try and get yourself out there a couple more times. That way, I feel like we might want to switch over to antelope, though. I know we've touched on the deer quite a bit, and I'm thinking really generally, but we definitely have a pretty decent antelope herd, and our hunts are pretty fun. I don't know if there are people listening that, you know, haven't been antelope hunting before, but it's got to be the most underrated hunting experience there is.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think they don't get as much love for whatever reason, but some of our herds are doing incredibly well. Some of the same areas that I just talked about for mule deer are cranking out antelope. Central Nevada, Area 6, Area 14, 15, and even Area 4 in Pershing County are the, you know, they've just been growing. In fact, we're actually looking at moving antelope next year to augment some of our herds that are struggling with those herds. And the buck to doe ratios are high. The opportunities there, you're going to see more tags in some of those units. And so I would look to that if you're just, you know, want to get an antelope tag. Those areas I just mentioned in Central Nevada. If you've been hanging on to bonus points and you're, you know, only want to kill an 80-inch plus antelope, you know, those areas actually might have them too, because there's so many more. But still, the traditional ones, you know, 076, 021, 251 is another one that usually cranks some pretty big pronghorn. So I would look at those areas if you're interested in antelope hunting. And then doe hunts. We've got the antelope doe hunts still too. If you're sitting on those points, there's going to be some increased opportunity there. So we have cut that back a little bit, just because we are planning to do some translocations. So we're going to take mostly females in those, move them to other areas. So we've cut a little bit, but we still have pretty good opportunity. And those are really fun hunts. That's a great family hunt. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people will take their kids, like little kids, out, because, you know, you don't have to hike into a wilderness usually. They're near roads and things like that. You can go camping. And usually the success is like within, you know, a couple days,
right,
for those. Horns shorter than ears, technically.
Yep.
You can hunt, you know, young males on that too, but you got to be careful on that. So.
Yeah.
Well, the fun part I always think about is just being able to hunt all day long. Antelope are typically going to be out in the open more, and just your hunt doesn't end.
Yeah. That's what's fun about it. Yeah, you see so many, and like you said, you don't have to, you know, have that midday lull like with mule deer. A lot of times they're not even out during the midday. Right. So you can take a nap, but antelope hunting, yeah, you cruise all day and you're seeing them.
And for anyone at home, I'm really excited that you're sharing some of the information you're sharing, but I'm also cringing a little bit when you touch on certain unit groups and things I've missed. So it's a good thing Cody's here, because he's more forthcoming than I am. But no, exciting times, and I don't know, I'm still on the encouragement train, and that if you have been sitting on points, this is a good time to maybe spend them.
Yeah, that was a note that I had, and see, it's like, I learned something new every day. Is I noticed that the horn shorter than ears had gone down, but that makes sense if we're planning on taking some of them out.
Yeah. And we won't, I mean, we'll be moving them to other areas that haven't been doing so well. They've been had some challenges with drought and things like that. So yeah, I mean, for the future, I think, and we've put in a lot of investment into habitat work and water developments, and so that we're going to hopefully expand those antelope populations for the future too. I'm excited about that. I've got some real passionate things on connectivity, but we'll leave that to a future podcast.
We're going to do another podcast on that. And I guess to throw it out there, anybody that's wondering, we are going to do a follow-up. We're going to do an additional podcast that's going to include elk, potentially sheep, and the new moose hunt. So if you're noting that we're not talking about those, it's because we're going to have another podcast coming up in the next couple weeks. So, all right, guys, we're wrapping it up. Any final thoughts on the application period? Everybody that's listening, you have until 11 p.m. Pacific on May 8th to get your applications in. Go ahead and submit them now, because you can always go in and tinker with your choices, your order of your hunt choices, and add any additional ones in all the way up until the deadline.
Yeah, I like to do mine in piecemeal, honestly, because it's kind of overwhelming, because I put in for everything. I'll have my browser open for like 4 hours if I try to do it all. So I'll do like deer and antelope, and then do sheep later, and then do elk.
I usually knock out the easiest ones first, which is like mountain goat.
Yeah.
Because there's three choices, and I hit submit, and it's in.
That's true.
You know? But yeah, any closing thoughts, Bobby?
Yeah, the only thing I tell people is I know there are some people that they really want to go, and maybe they're just not familiar with the bonus points or the choices, but your bonus points compound through time, your chance to draw a tag, they really do count definitely by your license and crew points. And in terms of choices, apply for where you want to go the most at the top of your list. And if you're not going to do that, apply for the hardest choices followed by the easiest and just do the best you can with the five choices. If your number pops up, we're gonna look at all five choices before we move on to the next person. So they definitely count. And I know there are changes between states, but that's important to know. All five choices will get looked at before moving on to the next. So try and get out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we are going to try to link our Big Game Application Seminar that we do every year. We're going to try and we have a recording of it on our YouTube page, and we're going to try and link that in the description of the podcast as well. But it's a simple YouTube search of Nevada Big Game Application Seminar.
I would just say one final thing. If you're overwhelmed or want to know, just call us. Put in an in email to, what is it, endowinfo?
Yep.
Endow.org, or just call us up, and we answer tons of calls this time of year.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you run into any problems applying, there's always someone, or we have people on standby, not automated service messages. So
yeah, we're 7 days a week, and then the other spot is on endowlicensing.com. You can click the little green help button, and just type it in, and we answer those questions. So
yeah, because I get a lot of the general Endow ones too, just forwarded to me. If it's like, where do I apply for a mule deer or something? So mm-hmm. I usually try to answer every one I get.
Right on. We appreciate that, Cody, for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right.
I gave them all your secret spots, so.
Yeah. Right on. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That does it for this week's Nevada Wild.
Join us again next week for our next adventure, Nevada Wild. It's a production of the Nevada Department of Wildlife.